Mysteries and Challenges of Birth, Life and Death. Becoming a New Human Being. Chapter 5. Making the Two into One. Reflection. When you hear or read about the Christian mysteries and are touched inwardly, it may well be daunting. Maybe you thought you were already quite knowledgeable, had accomplished much, and were well advanced on the path of unfolding your true self. The forces of evil in heavenly places make every effort to make you believe this, so that you remain in illusion and a slave to them, just like Cinderella in the fairy tale initially spends all her life energy on preserving her natural state of life and catering to the pleasures of her stepmother and stepsisters. As soon as you are ready for the Gnostic Christian path of initiation, you are placed before a simple but not easy assignment: to die inwardly, so that an immortal body can be created. This is a threat to the ego, which is naturally centered on self-realization. And Jesus refers as follows to the decline of the ego that is a necessary phase in a truly spiritual development: except a grain of wheat fall into the earth and die, it abideth by itself alone. But if it die, it beareth much fruit. He that loveth his life loseth it, and he that hateth his life in this world shall keep it unto a life eternal. In history, we observe that within all authentic spiritual traditions, there is a division between the large group of people who sympathize with the path of mysteries and a much smaller group who actually follow that narrow path of healing. We could also term them the outer church and the inner church. Jesus says in this connection, "For many are called, but few are chosen." The strongly persecuted medieval Gnostic Christian movement of the Cathars in the 12th and 13th century in France, for example, distinguished between believers, croyants, and good people, bons hommes. In contrast to the Church of Rome in that time, men and women of the Cathars were equal, as was the case with certain earlier Gnostic communities, such as the Essenes and the Manichaeans. Both sexes could go the spiritual path and fulfill spiritual offices, because no difference exists between man and women in the dimensions of the soul and the spirit. Harmonious cooperation between men and women in both practical and spiritual fields is essential for the development of humanity and the unfolding of the plan of God. Only in the dimensions of the physical body and in the personality aspects is there a separation between the two sexes. In the dimension of the personality, this separation is less strict than in the dimension of the physical body. Every person has masculine qualities in the form of creative, yang, and feminine traits in the form of receiving, yin, qualities. The psychiatrist Carl Gustav Jung calls the feminine side of the man the anima, and the masculine side of the woman the animus. According to him, the animus and the anima, archetypes, are polarities in the collective unconsciousness. A well-balanced personality is characterized, among other things, by being able to express both the anima and the animus in consciousness and behavior. The Gnostic Christian path goes much higher and deeper than just balancing the masculine and feminine aspects of the personality, because the intention is that the dimensions of the soul and of the spirit are going to express themselves in the dimension of the personality and the physical body, whereby a total renewal can take place, called transfiguration. And the bonshommes among the Cathars, also known as the perfects or parfaits, had to undergo a very intensive initiation course of at least 3 years in isolation from the world, often in remote caves. And this was part of an inner process resulting in the death of the ego, a process known as the endura, akin to the English verb to endure, which means to bear patiently, to remain firm, to persist to the end. And it culminated in the light birth, which was confirmed in a ritual. And those who were thus initiated in a way befitting the people and culture of that time were now qualified to go out into the world in pairs to preach the gospel and to heal the sick, according to the commission that Jesus gives at the end of the Gospel of Mark. The bonshommes of the Cathar did not marry in order to fully dedicate themselves to their spiritual mission. You may not conclude from this, however, that it is wrong to enter into marriage or a relationship with a life partner if you want to go the path of the inner mysteries and want the inner Christ, Emmanuel, to develop. The biblical gospels do not show that Jesus was married, but there are several researchers who, based on studying other writings or reading the Akashic records, claim that his disciple Mary Magdalene was his partner. Of course, it is interesting to know whether this was really the case or not, but such information is quite irrelevant to following the path of the mysteries. In the Christian mysteries, it is primarily about the inner orientation, and it does not really matter whether the candidate is married or not, or has a love relationship in any form. He or she does not have to isolate himself from the world, because by dealing with the challenges and resistances that come in daily life, the necessary inner power is freed. It is important that a spiritual wedding will take place, as it is sung in the Bible book, the Song of Solomon, and about which you can also read in the last book of the Bible, the Revelation of John. The most famous work about this spiritual wedding is probably the Adornment of the Spiritual Marriage, which the mystic Jan van Ruusbroek, 1293 to 1381, wrote on the basis of his personal experiences, probably between 1335 and 1340. Contrary to what people often think, this classic work does not come into being in secluded isolation, but in the busy city life of Brussels in Belgium. Jan van Ruusbroek worked there for 25 years as a chaplain before he completely retired to a contemplative life in a monastery. Jan van Rusbroek was therefore at the very bottom rung of the hierarchy of the Church of Rome. Yet his mystical writings were generally acknowledged and appreciated during his lifetime. He did not experience the stubborn resistance and bad tidings with which many other well-known mystics had to contend. This was due not only to his amiable personality, but also because he formulated his findings in such a way that they fitted in with the orthodoxy of his time. His booklets, The Adornment of the Spiritual Marriage, is about the development of the love for God in man and is built on a structure derived from the four-part Bible verse of Matthew 25. Behold, the bridegroom comes, come ye forth to meet him. In the language of today, we can interpret these four sentences as follows. 1. Behold. That is, make sure that your observation is clear and that you are aware of yourself and are free of judgment and identifications. If you stick labels on something or someone, you do not see what or who he really is. 2. The bridegroom comes. That is, experience that the Christ, the Spirit, becomes active in you. That is, the completely different other one. Emmanuel, God within you, who propels you to a completely new development. 3. Go out. Respond to the invitation. Prepare yourself. Stay awake and work with the new life force. 4. To meet him. That is, trust that the mutual reconciliation leads to the joyful and salutary encounter. And this four-part structure is discussed in the three stages of the spiritual life described by van Rusbroek: the working life, the inner life, and the contemplative life. For example, in the writings of Jan van Rusbroek, we can recognize an inner path with 12 gates. The Christian way of Jan van Rusbroek is based on devotion, love for God, and devotion to the other one within the human being. In the East, such a devotional way of love is known as Bhakti Yoga, and in the West as the way of the monk. There are, of course, more spiritual paths. A path of initiation with more aspects described in narrative form is The Alchemical Wedding of Christian Rosicross, written in German and published in the year 1616 in Strasbourg under the title Chymische Hochzeit des Christiani Rosenkreuz anno 1459. Here, too, love for God and man plays an essential role. But there is also a great deal of attention placed on knowledge and decisiveness. It is a universal way which can be called Christian Gnostic and is preeminently suitable for the individualized and intellectual person in Western society in the 21st century. The Alchemical Wedding of Christian Rosicross was conceived at the beginning of the 17th century in the university town of Tübingen in southern Germany, within a group of Lutheran scholars, the so-called Tübingen Circle, for which Tobias Hess, 1558 to 1614, was the great inspiration. It is the most profound manifesto of the classical Rosicrucians. Historical research shows that this mystery script about the initiation path was written by the man who was also the co-author of the other two Rosicrucian manifestos that had previously been published in Latin, called Johann Valentin Andreae, 1586 to 1654. And the alchemical wedding, seven phases are distinguished in the form of 7 days. Of course, in practice, it is not about seven successful and successive periods of 24 hours, because going the mystery path in daily life requires practically a whole lifetime. Guarantees cannot be given. The only thing you can do is to prepare yourself and stay focused. The initiations into the mysteries cannot be forced, but come as a gift when the disciple of the soul is ready for them. Although certain milestones are distinguished on the inner road, it is good to realize that the inner development always continues. And that is why the book, The Voice of the Silence, talks about the endless end. The 7 days in the alchemical wedding correspond with, among others, the 7 days of creation in Genesis, the prologue of the Gospel of John, the seven words on the cross of Jesus, and with the seven letters that John wrote on Patmos to the seven churches in Asia, an indication for the sensory world, as they are described in the Bible book of the Revelation of John. Seven stages or days in the alchemical wedding can be formulated as follows. 1. Receiving the invitation. 2. Making the correct decision. 3. Being weighed. 4. Letting the old consciousness die. 5. Letting the new consciousness grow. 6. Realizing transformations. And 7. Being a gatekeeper. The mythical story begins on the eve of Easter, the day before the celebration of the resurrection of the inner man. The protagonist in the story, Christian Rosicross, has deeply pondered the great mysteries and makes ready to prepare a clean, unleavened bread in harmony with his cherished Easter lamb, the symbol of the inner Christ. This unleavened bread is thus the symbol of the renewed state of being that is the result of the transfiguration and is also called the bread of life. Then suddenly there is a violent storm that almost causes his little house in the mountain to fall apart. Then he feels someone tapping him on his shoulder. He turns around and sees an angelic winged lady in a blue robe covered with golden stars. Christian Rosicross is shocked to the core and receives from this impressive apparition an invitation to a royal wedding. Then the heavenly messenger, with a blast on a trumpet, disappears as miraculously as she appeared. In this fictitious autobiography, Christian Rosecross, also known as CRC, writes about this invitation letter in the chapter about the first day. It appeared to be so heavy that if it had been made of pure gold, it could hardly have been heavier. When I looked at it attentively, I found it sealed with a small seal in which, very delicately, a cross was engraved, with the inscription, "In hoc signo vinces," "In this sign you will conquer." As soon as I had seen this sign, I was reassured, as I knew that such a sign would be unpalatable to the devil, nor would he make use of it. Thus I carefully opened the letter. It contained the following poem, written with golden letters on a blue field. "This is the day, this day, this the day of the royal wedding is. Art thou thereto by birth inclined, and unto joy by God designed? Then thou mayst to the mountain wend, on which three stately temples stand, and there observe the wonder. Keep to the aim, in light remain, unless thou bathe most carefully, the wedding will do harm to thee. Woe to him who in sin delays, he will be found too light in weights." Underneath was written, "Sponsors et sponsa," bride and groom. Although Christian Rosecross had prepared himself long and seriously for an invitation to the alchemical wedding, he had not expected that he would have to meet certain conditions to be allowed to experience the wedding. He thought he would just be a welcome guest. But now he doubts seriously that he will meet the requirements. Christian Rosecross is indeed a sincere, spiritually aspiring person. But when he examines himself thoroughly, he realizes that he is certainly not yet free from sin, because he is not yet completely focused on the divine life, and is, for the most part, ignorant and insufficiently practiced. But that is precisely why he is a suitable candidate. You certainly do not have to be first perfect to go a spiritual path. Going the path is the quest for unification with the Spirit, from which perfection can manifest itself in the soul, in accordance with the commission that Jesus gives to the soul of his disciples, "Ye shall be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect." And we may see the celebration of the marriage between the queen and the king, or between the princess and the prince, narrated in the alchemical wedding and in many other stories and fairy tales, as well as the forging of the union between the soul and the spirit, between the renewed consciousness and the divine essence, directly connected with the plan of God, the word of the Father. And the two can thus become one, as it is also expressed in narrative form in, for example, Mozart's Magic Flute, in Cinderella, in Sleeping Beauty, in Snow White, and in Goethe's fairy tale of the Green Snake and the Beautiful Lily. The soul or consciousness is seen as feminine, receiving, and the mind as masculine, creative. Christian Rosecross, the symbol of the dedicated personality, who is a pupil of the soul, is allowed to witness the above-mentioned process of unification, through which he himself fundamentally changes and ultimately becomes qualified to cooperate in the execution of the divine plan of creation, of the Word that was in the beginning. And then, as a result of a revolutionary process, the personality, the soul, and the spirit form a powerful union, to which a statement by Ecclesiastes applies: a threefold cord is not quickly broken. The universal renewal process of a fusion of personality, soul, and spirit can also be recognized in the story from John 2, in which Jesus, at a wedding in Cana, following his baptism in the Jordan, changes water into wine. If we would take the story of the wedding at Cana literally, it is a bizarre story, as is the alchemical wedding of Christian Rosicross in itself. It would appear as if Jesus wanted to become popular with the merry party-goers in Galilee and amaze them by posing as a magician who could turn water into wine, so that they could dull their consciousness even more. Well, he who performs such tricks to prove himself does not make himself very credible as a prophet of the Holy One. In this story, however, it does not concern toxic drink of poor quality that causes inebriation, but concerns the fresh juice from the fruits of the living vine, symbol of the pure astral substances that can cleanse the human system and renew it: the Holy Spirit. It is these pure forces with a high frequency that Jesus makes available to the guests invited for the spiritual wedding. He has undergone this spiritual wedding himself, which is why he can state, "I and the Father are one." The fact that Jesus achieves the alchemical transformation is the first significant sign that he has reached a new level in his development. That is why it says that this special transformation takes place on the third day. In Jesus, mind, soul, and personality now form a harmonious new trinity, comparable to a passenger delivered to his destination in a horse-drawn carriage by a coachman. The coachman, symbol for the soul, does what the passenger, symbol for the spirit, wants him to do, and the horse, symbol for the personality, in his turn, goes where the driver guides him. And the six stone barrels in the story can be regarded as the six emanations of the six creation days in Genesis 1, which together lead to the seventh day, the Sabbath, on which God rested, and the autonomous, renewed man is allowed to complete the creation. Three substances are mentioned in the story: stone, the water vessels, water, and wine. And we may view them as the symbols for the personality, the soul, and the spirit, respectively. The psychiatrist and author Maurice Nicol, 1884 to 1953, a pupil of the esoteric teachers George Gurdjieff and Piotr Uspensky, relates the three substances to levels of understanding spiritual texts in his book The New Man, He links the first level to stone, and according to him, stone refers to the literal meaning of spiritual texts. And such a literal interpretation can be valuable, but is very limited. Spiritual texts are spiritual because there is also a higher reality hidden behind them, which is only accessible to people with an inner understanding. For them, there is not only the rigid form of the stone, but also the flowing water in which everything is not yet clearly seen, but still it is a level of understanding in which the outward form retreats. The third and highest level relates to living from a new inner understanding that is constantly expanding. The inner doctrine has then become a possession in the blood and is thus symbolized by wine. The three stages mentioned, stone, water, and wine, have a universal character and can thus be found in all domains and traditions. We should also bear in mind that not all triads fit together exactly. In nature, we know the stages of caterpillar, pupa, and butterfly. In bread production, there is the grain, the dough, and the finished bread. We know water in the three aggregate states of ice, liquid water, and vapor. And in the alchemical tradition, the three developmental stages are referred to as the negrido, black, the albedo, white, and the rubido, red. In the fairy tale of Snow White, these three phases are also potentially present. She has hair that is black, like ebony, skin that is white like snow, and lips that are red like blood. Within the guild system in the Middle Ages, also 3 degrees were known: pupil, companion, and master. In the invitation to the alchemical wedding of Christian Rosencross, we read about 3 temples. The temple tent in the desert of the people of Israel and the Jewish temple in Jerusalem had 3 sections, the forecourt, the holy, and the holy of holies. The book, The Voice of the Silence by Helena Blavatsky, mentions 3 halls, the hall of ignorance, the hall of learning, and the hall of wisdom. The 3 wise men from the east come with 3 gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Jesus speaks about the way, the truth, and the life. The Apostle Paul talks about the phases of faith, hope, and charity. Jan van Rusbroek writes about the working life, the inner life, and the God contemplative life. And the classical Rosicrucians from the 17th century summarized the spiritual renewal process in their first manifesto, The Call of the Rosicrucian Brotherhood, or the Fama Fraternitatis, RC, as follows: We are born of God, we die in Jesus, and we are reborn through the Holy Spirit.